All right. Well, thank you very much for being here. It's really a pleasure and an honor to have my first official speech in this new role take place in Omaha, back in my home state. It's very nice to be home. I came home a couple days early so I could spend a couple of days on the farm with my family and see that farm again. It's always great to see it in the summertime with everything green. And unfortunately, the corn and the beans on our farm aren't very high this year because they got hailed out. So they're about as half as high as they should be, but still really nice to be with the family and on the farm. I'm extremely pleased to be able to take this position. I'm very grateful to the President, to Ambassador Froman, for selecting me for this position. It really is an amazing time for U.S. agriculture. USDA is forecasting $149.5 billion in U.S. ag exports this year, another new record. And it's been a real privilege for me for the past 4 years. I've been working at USDA on the trade issues from that angle as well. And I'm pleased to be able to continue that. We really have one of the most ambitious trade agendas in several decades right now. We're negotiating the Trans-Pacific Partnership with 12 other Asian-Pacific nations. We're in negotiations with the EU for what we call the TTIP, or the Transatlantic Trade and Investment Partnership. And we have a number of bilateral and ongoing negotiations with countries as well, both to maintain and expand opportunities for U.S. agriculture. So, again, extremely pleased for the opportunity. Look forward to working with U.S. farmers and ranchers to increase their bottom line and create new opportunities for U.S. ag. So with that, I'm happy to take questions.
The big topic here, China, of course, and some of the barriers to trade with them, but opportunities as well.
Right.
So how do you view China in your new position here?
China obviously is an extremely important. They are our number one trading partner. Just in the time that I have been serving in my role at USDA, China overtook Canada and Mexico and went from that third position to take first place in terms of the value of our exports. And so they're critically important, and particularly for our oilseed producers, where the majority of what we export in oilseeds goes straight to China. They are becoming an increasingly important market for our corn crop. And of course, that's where we face some great uncertainty. Recently, I'm sure you've all heard that China's new testing regime on dry distillers grains and on our corn crop has led to a number of rejections. We've been working very closely with China to have its regulatory system and the procedures that it uses to judge exports match ours, or at least work more closely with us to make sure that those procedures are timely and predictable. And one of the key issues there is, of course, their approval system for biotech events, which is the current cause of concern. So we work with China very closely at the technical level to exchange information about how we make regulatory decisions, all the way up to ministerial level, where we have raised this issue and the importance of keeping our exports moving at the highest levels of their government.
Would you say that regulatory environment is kind of the paramount challenge to address when it comes to working with that?
Yes, I think both with China and with other countries, frankly. As tariffs go down globally, what we see are sanitary and phytosanitary barriers taking their place. And the reason for those barriers varies greatly. With some countries, it's simply capacity. In the United States, we have a cadre of scientists working for different government agencies who can conduct risk assessments thoroughly and quickly to determine whether products should be able to enter into the United States, to make a scientific judgment about whether those products might pose a risk to U.S. animal or plant or human health. A lot of countries don't have that. They might have a very small team of scientists. They hear about a disease that is present in the United States, a particular insect infestation. And the easiest decision to make is to say, we're going to ban it because we can't do the study right now to determine what comes in. So we work with countries to build their capacity, to make sure that they can rely on international standards for those kinds of, to judge those kinds of diseases or pests or food additives, to make sure that they're making good decisions for their people. We wouldn't do any less for ourselves. But then there are some of those SPS barriers where we wonder if, in fact, they're just taking the place of tariff barriers, or if they're based more on concerns about competitiveness and protectionism. And so we push very hard globally to make sure that the those barriers or those regulations are based on science, to share scientific information and to push at a political level if we believe, in fact, that countries are not behaving consistent with their international obligations.
With the Trans-Pacific Partnership, kind of came to a halt there when the discussions came up with Japan. Can you give an update on, is that moving again, or what's kind of your assessment of that?
Well, it never really stopped moving. It's slow and steady progress is what I would say. I think it's important to remember that Japan, despite the barriers that we face, is our number one market in beef and in pork. It's our number three market in rice, our number six market in dairy. So even though they have, I think, one of the most protected markets, agricultural markets in the world, they're an incredibly important business partner. And there's a lot of value on the table to taking down the barriers in those areas. But with all of the economic partnership agreements, is what Japan calls its free trade agreements with other countries, for all of the EPAs that Japan has, almost all of those products were excluded from consideration. So in joining the Trans-Pacific Partnership, Japan agreed that there would be no product exclusions. So every product is on the table, but frankly, they've never done this before. And so we are trying to be very thorough in going through every one of those products, even in those sensitive areas, and making sure that we get the best deal possible. And so it's slow and it's difficult slogging, but we are continuing to make progress, and it is a really big focus, obviously, for me and for the ag negotiating team at USTR right now.
Can you tell us where we are on TTIP and what some of the administration's goals are for agricultural improvement and exports to the European Union?
Well, some of what we've talked about previously, which is that combination of tariff and non-tariff barriers, are really the focus for us in TTIP. Europe generally has an average ag tariff that is much higher than the United States. Its tariff on some of our meat products are quite significant. What Europe sends to us, we are their number one ag export market. They send us a lot of wine, a lot of high-value cheeses and processed products. But our market share into Europe has actually gone down significantly in the past few years, and that's largely been because of barriers to being able to ship our products made with biotechnology, barriers to our beef products, for example. And so we're going to work on dismantling both their tariff system, which we think presents a good new opportunity, but also work on those SPS barriers. We hope we can make progress in making their biotech system approval system more timely and predictable. We'd like to work on production methods for poultry, for example, and for other meats, the kinds of pathogen reduction treatments, or PRTs as we call them, that are, you know, used widely and safe and recognized in the United States but not acceptable in Europe. So there are a number of those issues where we hope we can work with their regulators to get sort of mutual acceptance of the other's process and really open up those markets to the U.S.
Country of origin labeling. Are you involved with that, or will you have to handle the aftermath of it?
I'm involved to the extent that it, of course, is an active litigation. We expect a report on the latest round in that case to be made public very soon. At that point, we may have decisions to make based on what the appellate body says and how our regulations were seen to comply with or not with WTO obligations. So, you know, at that point, then there may be work to do with stakeholders to look at how we move forward. But at this point, still waiting on that public report.
I have a real specific question about the MIR 162 event and the certification that China is asking for. With what's happened to date, does it look like China's going to be effectively out of the U.S. corn and DDG export market for the rest of the year, or how long of a time period do you think that would be? And I know the U.S. Grains Council wants China to approve the VIPTER event. How far away are we from that?
I think those are both good questions, and frankly, we're spending time trying to find the answer. We were just recently notified of the testing procedures that China was going to be using on those dry distillers' grains. We're trying to find out more about that. I think we have some concerns about the reliability of that testing and the difference you might get between a result when a boat leaves our shores and lands in China, and so we really want to talk to our counterparts about those procedures. And, you know, we have been engaging with China about its approval system and the way that it approves events generally and where particular events are in the pipeline, and we'll continue to engage with them regarding Viptera and other events as well.
Because this has been fairly disruptive to the whole system, has it not?
Absolutely, yes, it is. It has been, and it certainly increases the cost and risk of doing business with China, and who is, as I've mentioned earlier, a really critical market for us.
Yeah, so you're working on the synchronization process with them, and is that something that you think will take a long time?
Again, I think there are different aspects of their process that we're trying to engage with them about. I mean, ultimately, what you'd love to see is for approvals to happen in other countries at a similar time frame that they happen in the United States. That's true not just with China, but with some of our other partners as well. And so how you work on or how you can engage with them about many different aspects of their process to make that happen are things that we're doing with China. But there are lots of decision points, and so we are trying to look at this comprehensively.